Welcome to the Ross, L and Luke show. We're Aussie blokes, we're dads and we're entrepreneurs. Between us, we've made a lot of mistakes and learned a few things about life, love, relationships and business. And we're here to share those with you. You may get three different perspectives or you may get one universal agreement. But whatever you take away from today, you can be guaranteed we enjoyed delivering it to you.
Welcome. Hello and welcome.
Howdy.
How are you guys?
Well.
Yes. Yeah, you know. Good. Excellent. Excellent.
Had a good night's sleep.
Awesome. Helps. I think that's always a really good start.
Yeah. Sleeping? Yeah.
Sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was my, I reckon, probably once every month or two, I get that one good night.
You can't make up the sleep debt, right? You know that?
I think the whole sleep debt thing is bullshit.
No, it's true. It's true. I was in the bath last night reading a bit more of the... my favourite sleep book. Okay. And yeah.
Is that the best place for a sleep book, in the bar?
Well, actually, because I've got, borderline narcolepsy, probably not. All I'm worried about is if I just wake up and my, $60 hardcover book's in the bloody water. So I did stop after about four or five pages. But there was a section in there about when we get old, and there's a certain pressure that you need, your body naturally creates to, obviously set melatonin release in play, so you can actually get to sleep and wake up at a reasonable time. And they said that decreases when you get older, so it's harder and you get caught in a bit of a vicious cycle. So there's a lot of sleep debt there, and that's why you find older people will sort of wake up really early. Sparrows fart, they're the ones at 4 or 5 a.m. just always up, and they have trouble getting to sleep at night. And the problem is they generally have a bit of a snooze later on in the evening or later in the day, and that actually decreases that amount of pressure required in the sleep cycle to produce that melatonin, and it's really hard to get out of. So it's a bit of a pandemic. It's like 40% of the population in the aged people that suffer from it. So I know a few that are like that. So interesting, right?
So what do you think about? And I don't know if you've even heard of it. The theory where you can actually sleep, if you sleep regularly, you can sleep a lot less. So much so that you can get down. I think the record I've heard about is 5 minutes an hour.
It's non-existent.
Sounds like madness.
It is.
Well, so there's a lot of people throughout history that have done that. That's the shortest I've heard of. Normally it's, kind of 15 minutes is usually what they get to. Einstein, I believe, was one of them. He used to do that.
That's still 6 hours in a 24-hour cycle. If he's doing 15 minutes every hour.
Well, he wasn't doing an hour. Yeah, so 5 minutes an hour was the shortest amount that, per hour. That was probably
to keep functioning. Yeah, so I suppose it depends how you look at it. So to function at an optimal level in life, hold down a job, drive a car, and all the rest of it, you potentially wouldn't be able to do those kinds of things. If you're in a controlled environment, for sure you could have, that may work. But
yeah, power nap theory.
Yeah, yes and no. Like, there is things, and everyone's got different, points of view. But from what I've read, that the power naps generally do help, 15 to 20 minutes long. But also, depending on what time of day you have them, if you're having them later in the day, can be a potential issue, especially if you're not young. Young kids, to have them later in the day is not too bad. It's not really going to affect their ability to sleep. But if you are old and you are suffering from, waking up early and unable to get to sleep, melatonin supplements, good high quality melatonin supplement from the States. Don't buy the garbage that they sell in Australia. I won't mention the brands, but it's just rubbish. It's, so that will definitely help that. But, sleep covers everything. It's the repair that we need. The brains, even to learn new things. I was saying that they've done studies where they put people on 4 to 6 hours a night, and then people that were on 8 to 10, and they did a test in the morning. I think it was like 100 questions, and it might be recall and things like that. And they tested them the next morning, and there was a huge difference. I think the people who got 6 hours or less sleep resulted in 60% less of incorrect answers compared to what they did, you know, to the other group that got a good night's sleep. So the ability to retain and learn is, you know, is linked to sleep. So if you're an entrepreneur out there and you're burning the candle at each end and you're going to these, you're going to seminars, or even if you, you're spending big money on, learning, but you're not getting any sleep, you're kind of selling yourself short, I'd hate to say. So good night's rest is imperative for learning and, and recall. Yeah.
And thinking.
Thinking, yeah.
I know my kids are pretty ratty when they don't get enough sleep. Especially one of them. He wakes up in the morning and you're like, you didn't get enough sleep today, did you? Last night, did you?
Yeah.
No, I'm fine, I got it. Yeah, I'm sure you did. Yeah,
everything's tight. So yeah, that's I like reading this book in Dribs and Drabs, and it's got some really good, informative stuff. So at the forefront of it.
So then what about the theory that some, maybe many, maybe most high achievers do go with less sleep? So one of the classics that was often quoted was Margaret Thatcher.
Yep.
Ronald
Reagan was another one.
Very high achiever.
And do you know, the funny thing is, and here I'll put it out, there's a big disclaimer on this, right? Because it's only just research. But they both suffered from early onset dementia and I believe Alzheimer's. Mm. And there's links now, there's correlation between lack of sleep and the early onset of dementia. So looking at genes and genetics and this and that, but this guy Matt Walker's looked at areas where that relates to people not getting enough sleep. And there is, if you look through the history books, there's those people that are, that, like them, workhorses, known to get 4 hours a night, sometimes less, that they suffered from this. So there's definitely a little bit of a link, they believe, which is interesting. So it should be, encouraged. It's the prescription.
Yep.
And there it is. It's just because it's not sold to us in a little pill that costs a fortune and, radically changes our life without us having to actually do anything. It literally is sold as it'll repair your brain, it'll help you, think better, think faster, retain information, repair, your body.
Talking to the entrepreneurs, there's this whole world of hustle.
Yeah.
So there's people that just believe you just got to hustle, I'll sleep when I'm dead, all this sort of stuff. So it's often associated with higher achievement, even at our level rather than world leader level. So
there's a lot there, yeah.
And for some people, it does result in a higher achievement than what they had.
I'm wondering if
it's all relative though,
right?
It is
all relative.
It
is all relative.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the hours you spend awake change. Like if you get less sleep and you don't get the healing your body needs, whether you'll just pass away earlier. So the number of hours alive work out to be the same.
That's a great study. It's a lifelong study. There's huge benefits. They say a simple shift in daylight savings time, one way or the other. There's a 20% mortality rate when we get an hour's less sleep in the Southern Hemisphere because of daylight savings. It's fact.
Wow.
Yeah, and so guess what? It goes back 22 or 25% the other way.
The Queenslanders are right.
Yeah, like less. So this is fact in hospitals. And the funny thing is about the hustle as well, that there was a story mainly from the medical fraternity that there was a doctor many years ago, I think it was in the mid-90s, and this is where that terminology, that where doctors work round the clock, and that's expected.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
They've got to operate on people and you're strung out.
It's equivalent to a guy, being 2 to 3 times over the limit. If someone's worked a 20-hour shift, you would not let them near you in a heartbeat, let alone with a scalpel and to make decisions. So there was a doctor who, he was just juiced up. He was on coke. This is why he was like a head surgeon at a hospital, and this guy would work 18 to 20 hour shifts. And he'd say to his trainees, this is the standard. This is how you need to work. And then this guy was known to import all sorts of stuff in from overseas. to keep himself going. And they're like, this guy's insatiable. Like, what's wrong with him? You know, and they're like, well, that's just the standard. And so apparently that's where it sort of, you know, sort of stems from the medical profession, you know, not only accepting it, but it being the norm where, you know, what's on the other side of the coin, if they are being sent home after a 12-hour shift to get good amount of rest and, you know, rejuvenate, you know, what would be the difference at the other end? You know?
Well, and what do they have in common with the world leaders? Big egos. It's all about
big egos. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Insert, yeah.
So
yeah.
All of you surgeons out there, that was Al saying that. You've got big fucking egos.
And it kind of would feel good, right? Saving lives on the fly, you know. Hypothetical.
Being insured for the malpractice.
Hundred cups of coffee. I'll rest when I'm dead. It kind of would feel cool now I think about it. So I can see how they do it. So
there is a culture. So working in that coaching space.
Yeah.
There is a culture that kind of, you know, the good ones just put it out there as an option. There are some, though, that attempt to make others feel like they're underdoing it by not flogging themselves.
Yeah.
And Ross threw this question out there a little while back. Did you do it while we were talking here or in another conversation about whether the hustle was required?
Yeah.
As part of the entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah, it's interesting. So there's, you know, speaking about the 8 levels of human potential, the hustle appears at the third and fifth levels, the kind of warrior and the entrepreneur driver phase. And there's a lot of hustle in that space when they try to work really hard and create a lot of wealth. And it's almost like it's a rite of passage to go through to get to the other side of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, can we skip that without being the hustle? Can we still get through that, you know, that level and learn what we need to without being a hustle? I don't know. I haven't yet seen anyone do it. I don't know of an entrepreneur who's made lots and lots of money who hasn't been through the hustle.
Good. So let's go to the very basic example that's always trotted out here. Before that dude ran the 4-minute mile, it was impossible.
Mm.
Then he ran it and then everyone could run it.
Yeah.
It's possible. We're just buying a different story at the moment.
Yeah.
Of course it's possible.
Sure, as you know, I'm not saying it's not. I don't have an example that we can use to learn from to deliver the results.
Sure.
And I think the learning though is responsibility. Like that person is responsible for the result. That doesn't mean they have to do it, but there's a really deep learning that they can make things happen. But they go, I can make things happen, not I can make things happen through someone else.
Right.
And like when they get that, then they get to look at business differently, I think. Rather than, hey, I need to make it happen. Well, you do need to make it happen, but you don't need to be the one who makes it happen. As in, does the action.
Yeah, look, it's interesting. I mean, I've got one coaching client that, you know, they've had success. In the time we've worked together, they've had success, you know, in the areas they defined as successful. And we definitely went through a phase of amping up the... What was, you know, the focus and the energy. Mm-hmm. We never once spoke about hustle. We never once spoke about sacrificing health and well-being. In fact, we spoke about the opposite, that actually health and well-being comes first. It does come first.
Mm, it has to.
And so that might be an answer. If hustle actually feels good, okay.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm not discounting what you're saying, Luke, at all. However, the best take I've ever heard on this sleep thing is we do not have to sleep 8 hours a night every night of our life. Because that, like everything we do as human beings, we go through cycles.
Yeah.
And when we're kids, we sleep more like 12 hours. You know, so I'm sure there's a phase where we can rob Peter a little bit and then we just pay Paul at another time.
Yeah.
So.
It's not true.
According to one expert.
Yeah.
Who's probably got an ego as big as a surgeon.
Oh, he does. Jesus sells it, yeah.
No, there's a lot of people there's a lot of studies that have been done that say you can't get your sleep back.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you can't necessarily heal your body. Like what you've done, does that say, well, you can't get your sleep back? Does that matter? Does that kind of matter?
Exactly.
Yeah, can we not still heal our body for what it needs? Because sleep is healing. And as Luke was saying, you were the learning as well.
Yeah.
We replay the day in our head and we get a deeper learning. Which is why if you want to solve a problem, you go to bed thinking about what that challenge is. So, you look at your goals before you go to bed and you wake up the next day with a fresh view of your goals sometimes. So,
yeah,
it's a great way to go to bed if you want to be working on something. You know, what is the goal that I want to achieve? Go to bed and hopefully wake up with a solution after a good night's sleep.
Yeah, there's definitely an optimal amount of sleep, you know what I mean? And then they've got recommended, retail, which, everyone should be having, and some are different. So you are right. Like, you might be a six, I'm definitely an eight. I function better. So it's more just having that awareness. So you are right, in that sense that it's all variable between, each individual. So
yeah, I remember as a kid, I used to wake up anywhere between 2 and 5 in the morning. I was done. Like my sleep was done.
Yeah.
2 and 5 in the morning. Like I was needed very little sleep. But then there was a point in my teens where I discovered it was nice to sleep in. And that was it. I've never slept the same since.
Yeah.
So now I need a full, a full night's sleep just like everybody else. And I don't function well, I know that, if I don't get enough sleep. One night I can get away with. Maybe 2.
Yeah.
But a third one, no.
So my norm for as long as I can remember, so let's just say the last 20 years is 5 to 6 hours a night.
Yeah,
that's my norm, and that's not every night. So yes, I'll have cycles where. So last night was probably 9 or so. I woke up at one stage to have a drink of water, then smash the glass, and then clean the glass up, and then I went back to sleep.
You weren't angry? Damn you, waking me up!
I just missed the bedside table.
Yeah,
so I'm on plastic cups then.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah, I think I'm the same. No glass, especially when you're a bit groggy in the morning. So.
That's right. So, I definitely woke up just after 9 a.m. actually and felt all right. So,
yeah, nice. And you look refreshed though. I think, you look like you've been on holidays. No, you do. I'm dead set. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. So that's.
I could write a book, the 9 hour sleep holiday.
That's it, mate. Yeah. Look like you've been on holidays for weeks, just after one night.
Yeah.
Sleep habits and.
All it requires is an extra 3 hours investment.
Yeah. Here's a fistful of melatonin and an eye pillow. Sleep at this optimal temperature.
But then practically speaking, the problem I've got is the brain activity. So, and again, that's why I just started like 20 years. So the time I've been in business has just been that you talk about wanting to solve or solving problems, setting up your brain to solve problems.
Yeah.
So I just say my brain does that anyway. Whether I want it to or not want it to, it's just constantly trying to solve problems and constantly bugging me consciously with them.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
So much so.
Do you still want that pattern?
I'm so used to it, I never even thought about whether I want it or not. Like, it serves me, clearly.
Mm.
Is there something better if I let go of it? Don't know.
Mm.
So why would I let go of it?
I don't know. That's why I asked the question.
To allow that. That fresh thinking come in because naturally it's innate, it's within us, it's within everybody, and that to give it some reference is that when we do go away on holidays or we get as far away from that problem that you're thinking about, all of a sudden the fresh thinking comes in and we find that problem, and it's not because we think about it more, it's actually because we think about that less. And there was a terminology by George Polanski, so he's into that. The three principles kind of space, and he calls it's like a taco, like a speedometer in the car, thoughts per minute he calls it.
Right.
Yeah, it says sort of 0 to 50 thoughts, mind's calm, fresh thinking, and then 50 to 100, mild sort of stress, and then you've got 100 to 200, and then 300 plus, which is stress, anxiety, burnout is a big one. And these are like 300 plus thoughts per minute. And you're like, okay. And we all suffer from it. It was just an interesting analogy, and I thought, it's right. So learning to quiet the mind through whatever practice, it could be yoga, meditation, there's a million different ways to do it. Just get out, play a bit of sport as well.
One of the things I've found useful on my clients is just to write down the stuff that's on their mind.
Yeah.
Because as long as it's still in there and it needs to be held, like there's nothing else holding it, then they just replay it. They just replay it again and again and again, and it really distracts from what they need to do.
Yeah.
They go, oh, I still need to do that, I still need to do the other, instead of just focusing on what they need to do. So writing down to empty their... empty the vessel so you can just focus on that one thing. You know, I've had a lot of clients say that that's worked really well for them.
Simple, yeah, one step at a time, and that's a really good analogy. And literally, you do not need to change. You don't need to do anything. You don't need to think anything. You don't need to buy anything. You don't need to say anything. You don't. You know, that's all that. That's, we just lump it on our shoulders. We carry the weight of the world, and we're like, fuck, haven't done this, haven't done that. And you do feel it, you know, like you've only got a certain amount of hours in the day. Get done what you need to get done, step by step, break it down. Just do the most important thing that's next and focus on that. Be present. Do it to the best of your ability, right? Instead of doing 100 things shit.
Yeah. In fact, I've had a few people around me struggling with time. And they all say the same words. I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. And it's like, well, you know what? You do have time.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about it. Let's use the real words and say it's not a priority for me. And then in the saying, instead of I don't have enough time, you can say it's not a priority for me. And in that moment, you might go, oh, actually, this is a priority for me. Because it's so easy if you've got kids and you're running around, you're running your business and you're doing this, that, and the other, and your kid comes to you and goes, oh, Dad, can you help me with my homework? And I go, oh, sorry, son, you know, I don't have time right now. Really easy excuse and you're out.
Yeah.
But what if you change those words to, it's not a priority for me? Oh, Dad, can you help me with the homework? Sorry, son, it's not a priority. Let me help you with it right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's made a really big difference to the people I've shared that with. Just changing those words. Stop saying I don't have time and just say it's not a priority. Because then you can let it go. Oh, I would have loved to have done that. I don't have enough time. If you just say it's not a priority for me, it's gone. It's not a priority.
Mm.
Doesn't matter. And if it is a priority, you'll know straight away. Then you can do it.
Mm.
Yeah. And life, you know, generally should have a bit of feeling of ease to it, you know. Mm. Like you're just sort of organically addressing things that come up and, you know, yeah, you'll throw priority around things that that matter, and you know, there's things that don't. You know, I have conversations with people now, and I get anxious when I know that I'm burning time here. This is, you know, I love to hear a story about another business person, you know, and their transport needs, and I'm like, this is so not. It's not relevant to me. Like, I appreciate your time, but I really like, I'm really busy at the moment. So, you know, instead of just listening for the sake of listening, you know. That's me in that sort of space. You really have to guard your time carefully and what you give away, because like your kids, they're not going to be there forever.
Mm,
yeah. You know? Like, Dad, come in here, I've got something to show you. And it's, you know, could be anything. Could be the 100th drawing for the day. That's just a blue dot on a white bit of paper. That's not going to be there in 10 years.
Yeah.
Might not be there in 5. Might not be there tomorrow. So that's, you know, listening to yourself there and like having the ability to go, this is not going to happen all the time. This is not going to happen much longer. So I embrace it. You know, it's like, all the other stuff will come. It'll be there, especially work and life. It'll always be there. But your relationship with your kids and friends and all sorts of family, it won't always be there. So for me, that's been a big focus, for having that awareness. And I think about it, that I know my son's growing. He's like, you know, he's only 12 and he might be out of home in 5 or 6 years. Yeah?
Certainly on the streets and coming.
Yeah. And, you know, you're like, well, we won't have these moments. I think about that at the time when we interact. So,
yeah.
Hmm.
So we've spoken about sleep and the hustle and business and time. And so how do you guys feel about that catchphrase, work-life balance?
Well, on its own, it's just a bullshit phrase, isn't it?
Yeah.
However,
I do agree. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, however,
gotta put it out there because that's how people look at it.
Yeah, well, however, if we each apply it to ourselves individually, then it can have whatever meaning we ascribe to it. So, but when you look at it, a guy that's or a person that's scratching, you know, to cover their living costs will possibly want to spend more time at work to improve on that than someone who's got it all nailed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, the person who's got it all nailed has developed a habit of being at work a lot.
I was going to say that, yeah. They're tendency to hustle and, yeah.
So, I'd like to zoom it out a little bit. But the reason why I think it's a bullshit phrase is because there's so much that we do talk about day to day that has little real impact because of the big game that's going on. And the game that's going on is that we were brought into a world, but largely, and this is, you know, so as the whole world is gentrified, it becomes the more and more the norm. You know, we're brought into this world where we're expected at a very early age to adopt societal norms, to go through a typical education process with a typical outcome of serving a machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't recall, and I went to a decent primary school and a decent high school and a decent university, I don't recall the conversation of purpose being there. I don't recall the conversation of vision mm-hmm. being there. I don't recall anything other than learning a whole lot of stuff with no understanding of why we were learning it.
Yeah.
And being not being challenged in any real way as a person. And getting to the end of it all and just making decisions. I can't even tell you. I still can't tell you why I made some of the decisions I made at the end of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And other than just following. So I guess for me, it's been that swing between being me, which is resistant to what's going on. So no rationale on that either, other than resist what's going on. To, oh, I better do the right thing. I better pull my head in and do the right thing. Do what is expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my way of dealing with most situations for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's only recently, so it's only in my mid-40s where I've started to think, what is the point for me?
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, I think that's, I agree with that work-life balance. It shouldn't be a choice between both. It's again what you prioritise and choose to put your time and effort into, and yeah, at different points in your life you're going to want to put a bit more in to build and set yourself up. You know, potentially that's a model, but yeah, there's a chance there that you'll get through most of your life and realise that you've spent too much energy in one area at the detriment and sacrifice of the other. So yeah, I always encourage the, you know, I do enjoy the hustle, you know what I mean? Like I do like to get shit done and, you know, I like to be busy and all the rest of it. But, you know, there comes a time where, yeah, things suffer.
Yeah.
But, you know, not having awareness around that will have an impact. And at what point that you realise that is different for everybody. I think, you know, sooner, the younger you are, you can realise, you know, where that emphasis and energy should go, depending on what you're looking to achieve or what outcome you're looking for in life, the better off you'll be.
Yeah.
I always teach kids, don't put so much on it, man. You know, you're young, just, yeah, so you can have 100 goes at this. This is just a chance for you to get better. It's like, shit, you know, because no one's going to die. The world's not going to end. That's a real simple
mm-hmm.
analogy. Did anyone die? I heard it again the other day.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? No, look, the fucking photocopier doesn't work. No, it hasn't worked. So did anyone die? What is he talking about? Did anyone die? No, they didn't. So cool. We're all good then, aren't we? Yeah. So go away, have a bit of fresh thinking around it. And a guy I used to work with all the time, he used to say that too. I'd ring him up on a Friday and it's 3 o'clock and we'd have a massive week and I listen, mate, we just need to get out to, you know, middle of the city just to, you know, have a look at this job. I'll keep going. That's when I was in my hustle days. And he'd go, listen, mate, as much as I love to work like you, like we both love to work, it's Friday, it's 3 o'clock. Is anyone going to die if we don't get out there? And I said, what do you mean? You know, again, mm-hmm. he's going, no one's going to die, are they? I said, no. And I just was laughing. I thought, oh, God. So I had a bit of a realisation that he's right. He goes, ring the client back and tell her, it's 3 o'clock, we'll see you Monday.
Yep.
No one's going to die.
Yep. Yeah.
Best piece of advice I ever got.
But that's how we relate to everything in life.
Yeah.
You know, like if we don't do it right now, you know, we're going to die. But, you know, what does matter right now? Like, that's the, you know, that's the real question.
Yeah.
You know, so many things are missing out on. And when people talk about life, you know, work-life balance, I think it's really important just to focus on what part of your life isn't working, your life or your business, whatever part's not working, and then just inject energy into that. And that'll make a difference to that area. You don't need to, you know, try and make it all balance. You want something, you have some, an area of your life isn't working, inject some energy into it, make it work. You know, spend, if it's got to be time, it's time, but it's not always time. In fact, it's rarely does it have to be a significant amount of time. Normally it's just focused energy with an intention. You know, you want to have a better relationship. Well, what's going to make that relationship better? You know, is it flowers? Is it a romantic dinner? Is it a movie? I don't know. What is it for you and your partner? And just inject the energy there.
Yeah. That's the sort of symptoms-focused approach. Now, I'm not saying that's not appropriate because some people have got pretty bad symptoms. However, going back to what I was saying earlier, it's not that I wish. I would have been pretty happy to have been taught something other than this bullshit of toe the line or there's something wrong with you, you know?
Yeah. School.
That's right. It's simple as that, isn't it?
Yeah. That was basically how I felt about life until a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we do not toe the line, there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And all the signals are there for that.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, that's all the school is.
Yeah. Well, that's right and wrong. School, not the school, the authorities. That's the message from the authorities all the time.
Mm.
You know, now... No, I won't even go into it. There's just so much amazingly trite shit going on to force us to comply. I've been told... My daughter, who's 15, has been told she uses the word comply too much. And we all know where that comes from in our world.
Yeah.
it's my least favourite thing to do.
Did she reply? Comply, 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 comply. Did she just keep saying it until the person said yeah.
No, she just expresses herself a lot like her old man, poor girl. So I have certainly been mindful while doing what I was doing, which I more or less inherited from my old man. He ran the freaking place, but he was a 6 day a week.
Yeah.
Okay. So while kind of doing that, while emulating that, I was always saying to my kids, you know, the most important thing, I've said to them, and they know, I don't give a shit what your school results are. I do not care.
Yeah.
I do not care one little bit. What I care about is that whatever you choose to do, you do. And then if you change your mind and then change and then do whatever you're doing next.
Yeah.
Do it and be in it and find what pushes your buttons and do more of that. You know, that's been my message to them for a very long time. Now, their mum is a teacher, holds education in high school.
Stupid, yeah. It's like the criminal son of a judge.
So I don't know, maybe there's balance there, I don't know, but I would like to think that, because of course their mum's not wrong, it's just different points of view. And so I would like to think that when it comes to that moment in time where they start to actually make their own decisions for themselves, they'll at least have more than one idea and they'll actually feel liberated to make their own decision and knowing that there's different opportunities. And none of them are right, none of them are wrong. It's just about doing what they believe is right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I also think that kids who are, you know, inspired by their teachers about life and are given some real life skills and then presented with choices will often choose to study instead of just kind of ramming it down their throat. It's not like kids walking around going, I don't want to learn anything. You know, they're kind of natural sponges. It's just part of kind of being human to want at that age to learn everything you can.
Yeah.
Except maybe one of my boys who thinks he already knows everything, but he still enjoys learning.
However, what's his favourite activity?
Sport.
All right, what sport?
Oh, anything. There's a ball involved, that's it. He's all over it.
So if he was to do a maths assignment, and he could do it all around
sport. Yeah, that's right.
So this is what I discovered with my son. So I think he was still in primary school. He was following my trajectory, which is he was smart enough to find... because the education system is still a bit at our level. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was smart enough to be well above that level and so bored.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I can't remember what year it was. Certainly primary school, he did a maths assignment and he used Minecraft. Have you come across
that? Yeah.
Your kids,
Yeah. So they've been doing that at school for nothing since.
Well, so in the end, he did his maths. He created a Minecraft maze and all the elements of his assignment. You know, his teacher loved it.
Cool.
Yeah. And I noticed, because he showed me a big maths assignment that he did in the last week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about snowboarding, the physics of snowboarding.
Sweet.
He's a good snowboarder. He loves snowboarding. And so he's taken that for a good 6, 7, 8 years now. Mm-hmm. Okay, what do I love? And how can I then do what the school needs me to do, talking about something I love, which makes it a lot easier. So I feel happy, proud, call it what you will, that I've helped him come up with a way of at least getting through the really boring shit in an enjoyable way.
Yeah.
Daughter, I haven't got there. She just hates it all. She just cannot.
Yeah.
Have not found a way to motivate that one at all yet. But I take that on and say to myself, I don't think I've given enough attention to where she's at, to what really. Yeah, I take that on. As the parent, I take that on. Or as one of the parents.
That's that vested interest. And we all have it as parents. But I'll put it out there. What if I said that we have no control over the outcome of our lives?
You're asking us?
I'm just saying.
You're saying you said that to
the kids.
Okay. I think Ross and I share a similar philosophy here.
Are we about to launch into another half hour conversation?
Mine, this is really simple. What Luke just talked about to me is, it is critical, actually. And I think this answers that from my perspective. And that is this. Apparently, Leonardo da Vinci has the highest IQ ever. So somehow they retrospectively measured it higher than Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
So, well, him, Albert Einstein, take your pick. Very high IQ, right? Very intelligent guys. Now, would it be generous to say that either of those guys on their own would know everything there is to be known from the point of humans? Yeah. Everything that's come before them, in their moment and after.
Not even close.
1%, that would be generous, would it not? Of all human knowledge.
Yeah.
Right?
So intelligence doesn't also mean that they know a lot.
I just want to keep this simple. I just want to keep this simple. Yeah. But I choose Einstein and Da Vinci because those guys are seen as people that actually took us forward, actually were, almost had a divine creativity about them.
Yeah. You
know? So I'm not just talking about some dude who built a bigger business. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking about guys that actually, So, and the point is this, if we're generous and we say they know 1% of all human knowledge, that implies immediately they don't know 99%.
Yeah.
All right. Now, yes, in maths, if we talk maths probability, they actually know 0%. They actually know nothing in the whole scheme of things.
Mm.
So that means all of us are the same. So all of us effectively, in maths terms, in probability terms or whatever it is, we know nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so to ever say, I've got the answer or I know what the outcome should be is false because we know nothing, we know next to nothing.
Yeah.
Well, even Einstein himself said, you know, I can do an experiment 1,000 times to prove I'm right. All you need to do is once to prove me wrong.
Right. And hence why, again, I would cite him over many others. There's this whole scientific world of, you know, science proves things, unlike religion. It's bullshit. Most of it's theory.
Mm.
Probably all of it's theory.
Yeah. The number of things in the last probably 20 years that we've taken as gospel from science, you know, learnings and discoveries and everything else, and we've just proven them to be wrong.
Yeah.
None of it. Just like the earth being flat. How long was the earth flat for?
Another form of ego.
It's not round.
So anyway, to me, that's the answer to what you just raised, and that is that we absolutely have no idea of what the result should be, or we have ideas of what it could be. We have an intuitive idea of what can serve.
Yeah.
Because I think that's actually the better question. It's like, rather than what will the result be, it's like, what's going to serve us in this situation?
Yeah. So yeah, I suppose what if we took the hands off the control, so to speak,
driving your eyes.
And that is having that a bit like, well, not the ability, but just so we go into life, understanding that we have no control over the outcome of life, like how we end up. And this is complete. It may seem completely woo woo. Where we end up, what we do, how we do it. How to respond, we go through life, not relying, but understanding that, you know, our innate ability for things to come up as we need them.
We're manifestors.
From inside of us.
We're manifestors.
We'll come out when it's needed to make the right decision. So I'm not saying don't make any decisions, don't be strategic, but just having that understanding, you know, that we can rely on ourselves.
Yeah. Elon Musk's parents, according to his book, they didn't do any disciplining. They didn't believe in it. They believed that children would just naturally figure out what was right and wrong.
Yeah.
So they didn't have any, they didn't discipline their children.
Right.
And,
you know, I kind of believe in that. Like, there's some instances where, you know, you might need to put a few controls in place to mitigate, you know, anything getting too out of control. But yeah, I'm a fan of that because everything passes. You know, the thought that they have in their head there at the time, you know, when they're cracking the shits in the middle of the shopping centre, I stand there, you know. People go, man, you're patient. You know, no, I'm not really, but I'm just, I understand that this will pass, you know what I mean? And there's the other option is to scream and yell and manhandle them and, you know, assert your power and, you know.
Or you can get on the ground with them.
Yeah, that's another option too. Love it.
Join in. Have some fun.
Yeah.
Play hide and seek with them.
Yeah.
Run off around the corner with the trolley.
Yeah.
Disappear. Where's dad? Where's mum? Where are they gone?
And just going back there, the problem with disciplining children is it implies that what we do is a good model. I mean, our children model most of what they do in the early days on us anyway.
Yeah.
So to me, the implication of a parent disciplining a child is trying to force the child to do something that they won't do themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's a really good realization, I think, for a lot of people. Really getting what kids are doing. You know, their main way to learn is to model the other behavior. And, you know, before they've really started picking up, you know, traits from other kids at school, it's all us.
Yeah.
And to go, hey, don't do that. Oh, it's fine for me to do it, but not for you. Like, come on. Yeah.
But their greatest asset, I think, with kids is the ability to let go of things really quickly, and that's what I always encourage.
I've got one of each, one that holds on to it.
Does that apply to girls as well?
And because that's
well, the other one just lets go in a moment, like, yeah. So I got one of each, one that'll let go just like that, really good at letting go, and the other one that'll just hang on to it and hang on to it and really blow it out of proportion,
because they're patterns that you take through. You know, through your life, you know, they'll manifest in other areas, and potentially, you can get a bit stuck too when those sort of patterns and behaviours are looped. So I think it's important, and I encourage it. You know, it could be the worst thing in the world that's just happened. You've had to sort of reprimand your kid and say, look, this is, we're not cool with this. They're not listening. But then half an hour later, they're bouncing around doing cartwheels as if nothing's happened, and mum's there going, does she not understand what happened half an hour ago and how badly behaved she was?
Yeah.
So to have that conversation, hey, look, I love you and I'm glad that you're happy. I'm happy too, right?
Mm.
We still need to have a chat about what happened earlier, so I think just bringing that up.
At the time, I think it's really important. But afterwards, it's a bit challenging because they've moved on.
Sometimes at the time, if there's enough aggression in the air, it's a bit difficult to have the conversation.
Yeah, it can be,
true, it can be, it can be sometimes virtually impossible to have a conversation.
When the decibel level has reached a certain point.
Because they're full in their head, so at that time, they are, literally, it's like anyone, they're not going to respond.
Yeah.
I believe taking it up down the track gives it time for them to sort of reflect a little bit too.
It's like a debrief. If you do it later, it's just like a debrief, which is okay.
It is. I was thinking for myself at the time, the closer we can do it to the time, the more important. But it depends. Like if there's one, I got one kid that'll hang on to it forever. I could talk to him probably a week later and it'd still be very present for him.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one, I talk to him, an hour later and he'd go, what are you talking about? he'll take his jumper off at lunchtime. And then at the end of the day, you'll go to pick him up and you go, oh, where's your jumper? He'll go, it's in my bag. You check his bag. No, it's not in your bag. Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, that's funny. It's great. It's a great.
So the moment, I remember I first noticed this when we used to take him to Auskick, and he'd run around the field. He'd get hot. He'd take his jumper off and then just let it go where it was. Although that was an improvement from when he was a little baby. He used to take when he finished with something, he should just throw it. Like if it's done, throw. Done with that, throw. Done with that, throw. So we worked on that so that when he was done with it, he'd put it down instead of throwing it around the house.
Yeah.
And then on the footy field, he'd take his jumper off and just let it go wherever it was. And you'd see him come back afterwards and you go, where's your jumper? And then it would be trampled in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
focused on what he's, you know, what he's doing at the time. So living in the moment and being present.
Yeah, totally, totally. And the other one, hold on to, you know, onto everything. So totally different kids. One can just let go like that, and the other one hangs on to it.
Okay, maybe they should have a chat. His room, you kids are now sharing. Dad's got a new study. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
we're all different beings.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, we've been chatting here for a while.
It's been a very organic discussion today.
It has.
Yes.
It has. So hopefully that questions like that are really great to start to start an episode rather than near the end of an episode to begin a second one. But it's been awesome. I've really enjoyed today. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hooroo. Ciao.
Bye.
Cool.